So, Patriots, the one thing we have to continue to push is truth. And this is a truth war. And tonight we have Michael Yon on, who is a truth speaker. And just a quick background. Michael Yon was in Afghanistan when he began to do his citizen journalism when I started there as well. I was actually down in RC South, which is Regional Command South. That was Kandahar, Zabul Province, and Helmand Province. And Michael Yon was up in Jabad, which is over towards the east. And he was there for quite a period of time. We overlapped, but we've never met. Thanks to Lieutenant Colonel retired Pete Chambers, he linked us up. So this is actually the first time you're going to hear tonight that Michael and I have spoken. I have a great deal of respect for his work. He has been a truth teller from the beginning. He speaks direct, he's harsh, and he doesn't cut any punches. He's a former 10th Group Special Forces guy, and he's traveled the world to see what problems we're really dealing with. Tonight, you're going to get a snapshot of not just the local problem, meaning down at the Texas border, but he's going to paint a really good picture for you to understand the magnitude of how this deep state WEF, World Economic Forum, Fourth Reich, Nazi, homosexual, pedophile freaks, and psychopaths. Did I get it all? I think I got it all. I hope I got it all. Anyway, that they are all going to, what they're using immigration for as a weaponized system to destroy societies. So with that said, let's welcome Michael Yon.
It's a realignment of friendships and whatnot, you know, just like you do in the wars. You sort out really quickly who's serious and who's not. And here we are with one of those time frames again. You know, one of the most dangerous sorts of people as we go forward, though, are going to be the cowardly people, the ones who just go along. They're going to be just as dangerous as any traitor. They're going to be cowardly men and like all these generals that are and flag officers, you know, admirals and generals who are in active duty now, who did not stand up to the VAX, who are not saying shit about the border. They're just doing it. They are incredibly dangerous to us.
Well, Patriots, I'm really honored today to have somebody that I've crossed paths with many times, have never met face to face, but is literally one of the finest citizen journalists of war we've ever known. This is Michael Yon. Michael's work speaks for itself. He has been all over the world, and when he speaks truth, he speaks brutal truth, and I respect him immensely for it. I'm deeply honored to have him on the show today. He is down now near the border. He's talking. He's going to give us a good update on that and many more things, I'm sure. Michael, how are you? Happy to have you on the show.
I'm great. I'm still in the country of Panama. I've been down the Darien Gap again. As you know, I spend months and months down in Darien Gap, you know, especially since Biden was installed into office. I headed straight from the so-called inauguration, which basically was a bunch of National Guard there standing around. I was in D.C. for that. You know, they sure built that wall fast. And I flew straight to El Paso and watched the invasion began. And then I flew down to Colombia and watched the country of Colombia and watched the Darien Gap start to fill up from that side. And then I came over to the Panama side where I'm at now. And I've been, you know, places like here in Morocco and Lithuania and Greece and, you know, Ireland, watching this weaponization of migration. It's quite intense. This is clearly a war invasion, and Europe is, you know, unbelievably gone at this point. I spent a lot of time in Europe. I was at the elections in Netherlands in March, watching the farmers get their farms taken from them. And you know you're very familiar, Scott, with information operations. You should come with me to Netherlands and look at the high industrial strength information operation going on there. It would make you, I guess, proud on one side and, you know, and shudder on the other. You know the deal.
Yeah. And where was that again? I'm sorry.
Netherlands the reason I go to certain, like I just came in from Japan to here, and before that I was in Netherlands, and before that I was here again and down in the Darien Gap. But Netherlands, the reason I'm in these very specific places, it's not random. For instance, in Netherlands, the World Economic Forum and CCP are working together to take a huge amount of the Dutch farmland from the farmers. The farmers own about 62% of the land in Netherlands, more or less, if that number's accurate. And the Netherlands happens to contain the biggest port in Europe, Rotterdam, right? And then south of Rotterdam, it's one of the top 10 in the world as well. And then south of Rotterdam is Antwerp, which is the second largest port in Europe. So these are both in the top 10 in the world and the number one and two in Europe. And so also the railhead from the rail line that goes all the way from China, goes all the way from Shanghai, on the Pacific side and Chengdu and all these places, goes all the way, feeds over across Asia, and the terminus is there at Rotterdam. So think about this for a minute. When you look at the map, this line of communication, logistical line all the way across Asia ends right or begins right there at Rotterdam, right? And so what they're doing, the World Economic Forum, and they're very clear about what they're doing. This isn't hidden or conspiratorial. They say it. If you'll listen, they're working to take that land from the farmers, and they want to build something called Tri-State City. Tri-State City means three-state city, most of Netherlands, part of Belgium, and part of Germany, and it's this massive smart city. Now, when I say this sometimes publicly, they'll say that's conspiracy. And I'm like, well, you wrote the book. I mean, you've got a website, Tri-State City. You've got the maps drawn and you've broken ground. It's like normal when they say conspiracy. And then later on, everybody goes, well, everybody knew that. Well, you didn't 10 years ago when it was obvious, right? And so Tri-State City is this massive smart city, which they wish to hold 30 million people. And let me tell you see the weaponized migration in the United States is basically completed in Europe. It's still ongoing, but it's already reached a critical mass point. For instance, in Luxembourg, first time I was in Luxembourg is when I was actually in special forces doing training over there when I was stationed in Bad Tölz, Germany. But Luxembourg was nice. It was a jewel of Europe. Now if you go to Luxembourg, it's about 50%. Not 1.5%, about 50%, 50% new migrants. It's unbelievable. It's incredibly dangerous. I saw probably 10 or 12 fights in about 10 days that I was there. Literally a fight every day. Some migrant smashed the windows out on a car right out in front of my hotel. Downtown Luxembourg City, jewel of Europe. People defecating on the streets, literally African drug gangs running the street corners. Right in the open. I made a lot of video of this from my hotel room. I could look out my room and just they were like two floors below me, I mean, this is what's happened to Europe. And now you see a net that's Luxembourg, which is, as you know, right next door to Netherlands. And then in Netherlands, you see oh Lord, I mean they're already preparing people psychologically that they may have to take migrants, quote unquote, into their homes. Like the old widow lady with the giant farmhouse. It's got a lot of extra space. These migrants are they're cold and they need a place to stay. Now they haven't actually. Now the Dutch government hasn't actually said that you must take people in yet, they are psychologically preparing them to do so. And you know how this goes. You worked in the IO world, and we see the same in the United States now. We see this idea floating around now. They're floating the idea that you may need to take, quote unquote, migrants into your homes. Now, eventually, you know how this plays out. It plays out in the future with you need to take them in. In fact, here, we'll pay you $400 a month or something to take them in, right? And eventually, it plays out the way Stalin did it in the Holodomor in 32 and 30, 1932 and 33, or not just those years, but especially those years. And, he came and just wiped out the Kulaks, took all their farmland. I mean, physically took it by killing them, right? I keep telling all these Texas ranchers, I spend a lot of time in Texas. I'm about to head back up for Title 42 drop. And, some of these Texas ranchers, they see what's coming, they know what's coming, and they're resisting. And then there's others who are like, they think they're part of the big Bush club or something. I'm like, they are going to kill you with a K. You're going to be dead, and they're going to take your farms. That's how this goes. It doesn't matter. The older your money is, the better it's going to taste to these people that are going to take it, right? Because this is a replacement migration strategy. They're open about it. Nothing's hidden. It's in your face, and that's what's happening. Millions of people are coming across our border. That's why I'm down here in Darien Gap. I spend a lot of time down here. The Gap, the Darien Gap, for those who don't know, is. They call it the Gap because Highway 1, which is outside of my window here, I can see the Panama Canal outside my window as well, by the way, because I've come up to Panama City now. The gap is Highway 1 goes all the way from Alaska to Tierra del Fuego, but there's a one gap between Panama and Colombia. The road ends at a village called Yavitza in Darien province, right? And then it doesn't pick up again for about 100 kilometers at a place called Turbo in Colombia, right? So that area with no road is called the gap, or actually, as Panamanians call it, they call it the plug, the tampon, right? So they call it the plug, the Darien plug. And this is the one area where, for various reasons, the United States and others have, especially Panama, have wanted to keep this plug there. But now it's become a massive invasion route, right? So the instantaneous rate right now is more than 400,000 a year are passing through. Actually, the official numbers aren't out from the Panamanian government yet. But I would say it's probably more like 500,000 or 600,000 based on what I'm seeing, because I'm seeing about 1,500 to 2,000 a day with my own eyes when I'm down there now. So the we can see the number. And the rainy season is supposed to be here, by the way, and it's very late again. And usually the rainy season slows down the flows of the aliens coming through. But now, just week after week, month after month, it's just building and building and building, and like massive numbers of Chinese coming through, 3,000 to 6,000 a month. And these are not your average Chinese guys. You should see some of the stuff I've been publishing, and you should really see some of the stuff I haven't been publishing. But a lot of the Chinese who are coming through, they come across, some of them come across as right out as spies. I mean, like one guy, we call him Chai Ninja. We met him about 3 weeks ago, right as he came out of the Darien Gap. He had what's called the official accent. As you know, there's three main Chinese intelligence agencies we need to be concerned with. One is PS, the Public Security. Those are the ones who set up these police stations around the world, right? Like in Ireland, I was at one of their police stations in Ireland some months ago, and I was at another one over in London, right? They set up these police stations in New York. You saw a couple of weeks ago, a couple of these Chinese public security guys got arrested. Those are like their FBI. So they set up these police stations in Canada. They set them up in Australia, in Japan, and they literally enforce Chinese Communist Party law in foreign countries, right? So that's the public security. That's like the FBI. And then there's the MSS, which is the Ministry of State Security. That's like the Chinese CIA, right? CIA, right? That's MSS, Ministry of State Security. And then the other one is called the GS of the PLA. That's the General Staff of the People's Liberation Army. And they're sort of like the paramilitary sorts. And they have a special language school in a place called Luoyang, China, right? Now, I went to the U.S. language school in California, Defense Language Institute, but at DLI, we just learn to speak the language. We're not learning to be spies and that sort of thing. We're just learning to, to communicate, right? But at Luoyang, at their language institute there in China, the General Staff Language Institute there, they teach them how to actually be spies. So this one guy we met a few weeks ago, and he's a young guy. We've actually discovered a lot about him since then. He's in Mexico at the moment, but he came walking out of the Darien Gap late at night, very tired, and itching. These Morungai bugs were eating him alive. They're very special bugs. I've been eaten up by them myself, and he was really itching all over. And he was in an emotional state, hungry, and we talked for about an hour and a half. And I got a lot of it on recording and audio and video. And he's got what they call the official accent. The official. Now, if you learn a language like Mandarin, let's say you're going from Mandarin to German or Mandarin to Italian or Mandarin to English or whatever, it's very difficult to a language that's very different from your own, say Mandarin to English, as opposed to say Spanish to Portuguese. Yeah. But like Mandarin to English, it's very difficult to learn that language without an accent if you do it after puberty. So if you want somebody to have like zero accent, it's very important to try to learn that language before puberty. It's very difficult to get rid of that accent later. It's hard to scrub it all out, right? And but so he had what's called the official accent. He clearly learned it after puberty, but his accent was very good. And they basically go to this Luoyang language school, and it's total immersion. They've got American teachers and whatnot, and Canadian teachers and and that sort of thing. And you're like watching Gilligan's Island and, you know, American sports, and, you know, you know all this nuanced stuff and very textured. And, you know, hey, bro, you know exactly when to say hey, bro, and all this crap. You know what I mean? And so he had that going on clearly. But he was leaking a little too much. He was saying more than he should. He was saying, for instance, on April 7th and April 8th, so just a month ago, he was down in Bahamas, he said, and he bought the things I'm telling you are checkable if you're taking notes. So he said on April 7th, April 8th, he bought a boat in Nassau, Bahamas from a Scottish guy, and he was heading to Florida with his quote-unquote father. And his father was actually we saw him as well about 3 weeks ago in the Darien Gap. Anyway, so they were heading to Florida from Bahamas, bought this boat, $5,000 from a Scottish man in Bahamas. That's what he said. That's what this guy said. And then he started to head to Florida, ran out of fuel, and he was drifting. And the U.S. Coast Guard picked him up, right? So highly checkable information I'm giving you here. So he said the U.S. Coast Guard then sent him back to Bahamas. The Bahamas was deporting him back to China, and the flight went through Cuba. And in Cuba, he switched his onward flight from Cuba over to Quito, Ecuador. This is where most of the Chinese start. They start in South America. They start in Quito, Ecuador, right? Whether they come in from Amsterdam or other parts of the world, they go to Quito. And from Quito, they get on a bus and they go to a place called Copacabana, which I've done. They go to Nicocli. And in Nicocli, that's in Colombia. And in Nicocli, Colombia, which I've done this, they get on a boat for about maybe an hour and a half, and they go to a place called Copacabana, Colombia, which I've done this. And I spent several days in Copacabana, and I do not recommend you do that. It's felt very dangerous, a lot more than Afghanistan even. And then they go through the Darien Gap there from Copacabana. And that's where I met him. He had just emerged from the Darien Gap, very tired, very hungry, very itchy, and very loquacious. And he told his story, and I got his phone number, which, you know, I've been communicating with him. He's in Mexico now, right? And these are the sorts of people that you meet constantly while you're in the Darien Gap.
First of all, I just want to get a little bit of, for people to understand a little bit of your background, because your operational skills are pretty high. And so it's not just some guy that grabbed the camera and started running around the world. You were a soft background, right?
Yeah, I was in 10th Special Forces Group, and that's why I went to language school at the in California. And actually, you know, Green Beret time was great. It was one of the best times of my life. I only did it for 5 years, and then I got out, went to school, and started a business in Poland. And that was when really life got super interesting. So since that time, you know, I spent a lot of years in wars, Iraq, a couple of years there, a couple of years in Afghanistan, Philippines, spent a year up in Nepal. I've spent more than half of my life out of the United States in about 90 countries. So more than half of my life, not just my adult life, but more than half of my life has been downrange. And like right now I'm in Panama. I grew up in Florida though. I grew up just a Florida boy catching alligators and catching girls, and, you know, went off to special forces and never looked back.
That's awesome. You mapped out a pretty interesting issue, which was this kind of global snapshot of how the World Economic Forum, which AKA the Fourth Reich, is literally using as one of their prime methods of destabilization, this mass strategically organized immigration, and trying to break the back of societies in a replacement strategy, ultimately forcing people into the 15-minute cities, which are otherwise known as prison camps. This sort of strategy, they're strategically moving people around. Is this intended to specifically break the West, or is it going for other countries as well?
It's definitely breaking the West, but that also includes Japan. You know, I was just in Japan. I was on a place called Ishigaki Island, which is near Taiwan. It's near Senkaku, right? And you know, I was talking with the mayor there, and then up in Tokyo, met with some, you know, military people and intelligence guys and elected officials and that sort of thing. And the people who are awake in Japan, Japan has the same situation that we do in a lot of ways. I've actually, by the way, I've actually written three books about information war that are only in Japanese. They're not even in English, right? So I work with the Japanese quite a lot because I see Japan as our most important partner. Sorry, Great Britain, but it's Japan. You know what I mean? UK is important, but on the scale of things, Japan is absolutely vital. And the UK is just so fractured. You know, it's just more of a IO itself these days. And yeah, but the point is that Ishigaki Island near Taiwan, they're very concerned. For instance, any interruption with Taiwan would end up with a huge amount of fishing boats taking Taiwanese over to Ishigaki, which is actually in you know, it's an island of Japan. It'd be like coming into the Keys, right? It's in the Okinawa Prefecture, right? It'd be like the state of Florida, right? The Florida Keys. So Ishigaki is in Okinawa Prefecture, which would again be like the Florida Keys for Florida, right? You're in Japan at that point. And so and they're very worried that many of the people coming in, of course, Taiwan and Japan have very good relations, super tight relations. I mean, they basically love each other. They're probably making babies right now. You know what I mean? For some reason, Taiwanese and Japanese just really get along great. And but they also are cognizant that, you know, the mainlanders are have been inserting people into Okinawa into Taiwan for many years, right? And by the way, I spent about a year running around China. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with China. As you know, I've been up to Tibet and just all over the place. I got kicked out of Hong Kong actually in 2020. I was there for the fighting for 7 months between 2019 and 2020. If you web search my name, Michael Yan in Hong Kong, you'll see the police taking me to the airport and closing the door in the airplane, right? See, and so they finally kicked me out. And so I mean, I've really seen China from, you know, Beijing to Shanghai to Chengdu and just all over the place, you know, Xi'an, just many, many different places and up in Tibet, that sort of thing. And so I'm kind of familiar with their mindset insofar as the Hong Kongers call them Chai Nazis, Chai Nazis. What is Nazism, right? This term that gets thrown around a lot. And sometimes it's actually should be used. And then the term, if you ask the Hong Kongers, what's a Chai Nazi, right? And they'll say, well, not fascism is, you know, when fascism is when you know, private enterprise and government become so commingled that they're indistinguishable, like salt water, right? Sea water, salt water, it's just this big blend, right? And that's fascism. And see, we clearly have that to a large degree in the United States now and all over Europe, right? Now, Nazism took fascism and added a huge component of racism to it, right? So that's where you got Nazism. You just took fascism and you boosted it with racism, right? That's what the Han Chinese do in the Chinese Communist Party. They are ultra racist. I've never seen people more racist. And they're super overt about it. So this is interesting. Where I'm going to is very important with this. The Hong Kongers call them Chai Nazis. If you look on my Twitter, and the banner on the top, it says Chai Nazis. That's a photo I took in Hong Kong. The Hong Kongers, of course, are Cantonese speakers. They have a completely different culture. They even look different to me. I've spent so long in Asia, all over the place. They, you know, I can tell them apart, actually. And so, and they can tell each other apart. And the Hong Kongers, the Cantonese speaking Hong Kongers, and the mainland Han Chinese, they don't like each other, right? At all. And but what I'm getting to with this is the World Economic Forum and the Chinese Communist Party, they have a lot of short-term and medium-term goals that that overlap on the Venn diagram. For instance, destabilizing Europe, destabilizing Japan, and destroying the United States, Canada, that sort of thing, and taking over Central America. They have these things in common. So the Chinese Communist Party and the World Economic Forum, they cooperate extremely closely. For instance, you know, you have the annual meetings in Davos, you know, which you might have seen the Japanese journalist Misako Gannaha, who is really, you should have her on. She's unbelievable. Misako has been down here in Daring Gap with us, by the way. She's awesome. But she tracked down Klaus Schwab a few months ago in Davos and was pestering him. It was epic. It went viral. But you see, Chinese Communist Party, also has an annual meeting that's not in Davos. It's in China, right? A lot of people don't realize that, you know, there's the annual meeting in Davos. There's another one in China, right? And it's, again, it's not hidden. It's right on their website. It's none of this is conspiratorial hidden. It's right in your face, right? And so intermediate goals are the same. Destabilize Europe. Now, Chinese Communist Party, they have a vested interest, for instance, in watching Netherlands collapse, or, you know, the Dutch government led by Prime Minister Mark Rutte, he's totally captured. The Dutch government's captured, just like Canada is. You can see Klaus Schwab going, where do you find such a prime minister as Mark Rutte, you know, with his Nazi accent, you know, praising Mark Rutte in Netherlands. Now, Chinese Communist Party, CCP, wants Netherlands. That's the terminus of the railhead, of the railway that goes all the way across Asia and, you know, all the way to the Pacific Ocean at China, right? It ends right there at Rotterdam Harbor, one of the biggest harbors in the world, the biggest in Europe, and just south of that is Antwerp. So that Chinese Communist Party wants that. So does the World Economic Forum. So they've got these things in common, destabilize Europe. So now this is where they differ on the end state. On the end state, China is very clear that they want the world to be Han Chinese. And that means Hong Kongers, you're out. And I mean really out, like dead, right? And the same with Tibetans, of course. The Han Chinese, man, they do genocide like a farmer weeds the field, right? I mean, look what they're doing in Xinjiang to the Uyghurs. Look like what they do to the Falun Gong. You know, the Tibetans, of course, in Tibet, Mongolians. I mean, they just do it, right? The CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, the Han Chinese, they go full up Chinazi, right? So this is where they will differ in the end. And this is where it seemed like, you know, I was on the show with Alex Jones the other day. He called me up. We were talking about this stuff, and we were talking about Obama. Obama, Alex mentioned, the light seems to have come on in Obama's head some years ago when he realized that the Chinese Communist Party has no place for people like Obama on the Chinese Communist Party arc. You will be terminated, right? Ultimately, people like Obama are also useful idiots. Now, Obama, in his arrogance and semi-intellectualism, seems to think he's at the top of the heap. Nope, he'll be terminated, right? The Chinese Communist Party will terminate Bill Gates and Soros and that whole crowd, right? At the end of the day, they're going to fight each other. The World Economic Forum and the Chinese Communist Party are clearly going to fight at the end of the day. You know, if you rewind the tapes to the 1930s and that sort of thing, you know, with FDR and his big information campaign, like, you know, the Japanese want to take over the world. You know, the Japanese, you know, think about that. At the time, they had a population of about, what, 70 million, and probably like 20 of them spoke English. The Japanese were never going to take over the world, period. That's not even their personality. They were taking over some local areas and literally actually in self-defense, but they were not, that could go down a rabbit hole, but let's not go there for now. But the Japanese were never in a position to take over the world. They never, it's not even their personality. They're too introverted, right? And they never had the numbers. The Chinese Communist Party, that's a different story. They're highly aggressive. They are, they've got the numbers. They've got the technology. For instance, they're working on, I just put something up by Dr. Yan. She's a Chinese virologist. I just put something up from her this morning. She sent me this morning about how the Chinese have been weaponizing mosquitoes with dengue and drones and whatnot and delivery systems, right? She and I have been talking about this recently because there's a huge dengue outbreak and malaria outbreak here in Darien in Panama, right? There's a huge malaria outbreak. There's a lot of mosquito-borne illnesses that are really just exploding here. And so we've been talking about that with you know, Dr. Lawrence Sellin and others. He's a biological warfare expert. He's a friend of mine as well. He lives in Finland. He's a former Special Forces guy, actually. And then he became a medical doctor and a biological warfare expert. We've been talking about this quite a lot. You see, the Chinese are working on technology that can be used to target specific either ethnic groups or geographical areas, and you know, and they can do soft genocide, or let's say under genocides that don't include death camps, let's say, right? Genocides that include, for instance, what happened in Hong Kong. What happened in Hong Kong was a soft genocide. It's still unfolding, where they were bringing in the Han Chinese, the Chinese Communist Party were bringing in about 100 to 150 migrants per day for years on end until they took over the schools, took over the bureaucracy, started winning the elections or stealing the elections or doing something with the elections. I was there for a couple of them. And it was similar to the United States. So they just did a kind of a soft takeover until they did a pretty hard takeover there in 2019 and 20. And now it's complete. They've taken the Chinese Communist Party is taking Hong Kong, and they've done it with most people not even noticing. Right. So that's sort of a soft genocide right now. They've got the students in Hong Kong. They're not allowing them to study Cantonese the way they used to. They're getting the elite students to go over to mainland China to study Mandarin and to study the history, the prescribed history. The same here in Panama. I met members of the government here a couple of weeks ago, and I told them, you got a Confucius Institute right down the road. You know, the Confucius Institute, the University of Panama. I've been attacking Confucius Institute since 2014. Confucius Institute is a spy recruitment tool. It's an intelligence tool that's in universities all over the United States and Europe, like, you know, all the big universities. Chinese Communist Party will come in and they say, here, we'll give you, 100,000 or 500,000 a year or whatever. We'll put in, this classrooms and we'll bring in our own teachers. You should see the teachers they have here at the Confucius Institute in Panama City. Pretty young, 20-something-year-old Mandarin teachers, very pretty Chinese girls, right? This is mice stuff. They call it mice, right? Mice. When you're recruiting spies, intelligence operatives or counterintelligence, they use the mice, right? Mice, mousetrap. Mice is money, ideology, coercion, and ego, right? Money, ideology, coercion, and ego. Mice, right? And so what they do is they set up these Confucius Institutes and these places around the world. They target the children of the elite, and they get them into these classes like, yeah, it's time to learn Mandarin from these really cute Chinese girls. And then the really special students get scholarship offers to go study in China. Mice, here goes the mousetrap. So they do this with Germans. They do it with Americans and Canadians and all over the world. These Confucius Institutes are in Australia. They do it everywhere, right? Here in Panama. And they get them over to China and they start to really pick through and figure out who they want to make a long term. There's a great FBI counterintelligence film called Game of Pawns. Look up Game of Pawns. And it's you can see it on YouTube. It's a FBI counterintelligence film. It's about 20 or 30 minutes. And it shows this American student. And it's a true story, according to FBI. And actually, they have the American on there when he's in prison. And they get him over to China, start to recruit him. He takes the test for State Department. He fails it. He's starting to take money from him while he's in China. He's studying languages. They're recruiting him. And, when he fails the State Department test, they encourage him to take the test for the Central Intelligence Agency, which he does. And he passes it. And then as he's taking the polygraph, he kind of cracks. Anyway, he gets arrested and he goes to prison. It's a true story, right? And so this is how this mice thing works. They get you on the, again, money, ideology, coercion, ego, right? They had him on, at least on money. They had paid him at least $30,000 at one point as an example. And eventually they get you on coercion. They're going to get you on every sort of video and audio and maybe got you doing drugs or doing things that you don't want anybody to know, that sort of thing. Yeah, it's a huge industrial process.
It's a lot of moving parts on this. Let's go down to the Darien Gap. Let's talk about what we're facing here. Here's one of my things. We have heard a great deal over the last couple of years of these imminent huge invasions, which I think personally are part of their PSYOP, which they raise the expectations and then nothing happens, and raise the expectations and then nothing happens. This seems different this time, and that's what I want you to dig into.
Yeah, the Darien Gap. Now, this is one of the primary the reason I come to Darien Gap so much is because if you look at the map and you look at that area between Colombia and Panama, this is the one way where the world can funnel through to the United States, right? And Lara Logan, two or three years ago, we were talking, Lara, and in fact, she just sent me a message a couple minutes ago. She's We were talking on the phone a couple of years ago, and she's like, they're planning to, how Lara gets all fired up, the World Economic Forum plans to cause the migration of 1.2 billion people with a B, 1.2 billion people. And they say this, right? And so I call it HOP, human osmotic pressure. The HOP, the human osmotic pressure, is the push and pull of migration, right? HOP, human osmotic pressure. And they've been creating these pressures with food issues, with energy issues, economic collapse. So first you create the human osmotic pressure. There's huge information campaigns going on showing. I've published some of these videos, for instance, in Mandarin, showing Chinese how to get to Quito, Ecuador, and how to get up, on the buses and get to the Darien Gap. And it shows, the Red Cross hands out maps. Literally, I've got one here somewhere. They hand them out at the camps. It gives you very detailed information on how to get to the United States with 87 different numbers and email addresses and Twitter accounts and all sorts of stuff, right? And WhatsApp, the whole works. I mean, it's completely facilitated, right? So first, create the first the idea that borders don't exist, right? Imagine all the people, that sort of stuff, right? It's so over a period of gen this has happened over a period of generations. This is not something that just popped up last week, right? This is the stuff, this is like Alex Jones territory. When people really thought he was straight up, I said that to him, to Alex Jones, the other day. For years, I didn't want to have anything to do with him. And then as time went on, I'm like, that guy's not crazy. He sounds a little crazy. He actually just sees stuff before other people see it. And he says it in a way that can sound crazy, but he's not wrong, right? He's actually very smart on his ideas of these weaponized migrations and how the replacement strategy is unfolding and these sorts of things and the vaccines. He saw all that stuff years in advance, right? He saw it way back when. And so the Darien Gap is like a highway to the United States from the world. The rest of the world, about people from about 140 countries, they go to places like Suriname, for instance. The Haitians and the Cubans can go to Suriname first. Actually, the Cubans are now kind of bypassing Central South America, and they're going straight to Nicaragua and Mexico first. But a year and a half ago or so, the Cubans would go to Suriname, where they could show up with no visa, and the Haitians would go there, and then they would, get up to Colombia, and they could come through. So we have people from all over Africa, Asia, Afghans, Pakistanis, you wouldn't believe it, and Chinese, all coming through South America. Different entry points: Brazil, Chile, Suriname, Ecuador, and then they come through Colombia. Then they go through the Darien Gap, and then I intercept them, and then I intercept them again in other places like Mexico and Texas, right? And then other people on my team are constantly interacting with them and watching the flows. And likewise, the same. I've done the same over in Africa, for instance, in Morocco. You see, I've been over in Morocco watching the flows over to Spain. There's actually two Spanish cities in Africa called Ceuta and Melilla. They're two cities that are EU cities that are in Morocco, right? They're in Africa. So if you get into those cities, you are now in the EU, right? So the same sort of tactic is used everywhere, right? To erode the borders, whether it's, the Turks pushing people over into Greece, which I've been on that border. Lithuania, same there. Poland, of course, is not. Actually, people, harp on Poland. I lived in Poland for 2 years, by the way. People attack Poland by saying, oh, they're not allowing any migrants in, which is complete nonsense. Poland has massive numbers of Ukrainians there. They just don't let in a lot of people from the middle. They don't let anybody in from the Middle East or whatever. You can see the What's that Polish member of parliament? What's his name? Good Lord. I've messaged with him a few times. He's like, let me tell you how many terrorist attacks we've had in Poland. Zero. He's like, I love my zero. He'll always say zero. And I need to go see that guy. But, they don't, the thing about Poland is they will still defend their territory as Polish people. They have an identity as Polish people, which is still pretty strong. They're under information attack and that sort of thing, but it's still quite strong. So Poland, I think at least in the short term, is a problem that Poland has is geography. So it's always getting crushed by, you know, invaders coming and going, but separate story. But that's the same thing here with Panama and the Darien Gap. Panama itself is sort of in the position of Poland at this point, insofar as it happens to be a causeway for the world to come through Panama and get to the United States. Now, members of the Panamanian government told me recently in a meeting that 11% of the people in Panama now are new Venezuelans. I said, hold on, what did you just say? And she said, 11%. So I said, hold on, let me make sure we got this right. I know your English is very good, but did you just say 1%, 11% of the people in Panama now are Venezuelans? New Venezuelans is what you said, right? She's like, yes, these are because of the migration up to the United States. Many of the Venezuelans, as you know, Venezuela has collapsed. They were in Colombia. A huge amount of Venezuelans were in Colombia. I remember seeing them. They were all over the streets in places like Cartagena. You know, there were massive amounts of Venezuelans in Colombia. But now Colombia is also collapsing. So now we see tons of Colombians and Venezuelans coming through the Darien Gap. And a lot of them are staying here, right? And I see a helicopter landing in front of me. It's flying over to Albrook Airfield, where an airplane actually crashed out here about a week ago on the road out my window. I was actually down in the Darien Gap. It's one of those airplanes I charter to go to Darien Gap, and everybody's okay. They crashed in the road. You know, somebody was making video in the back seat, sort of thing, screaming. But everybody got out okay. Unbelievable. Anyway, this place is wild. But my alarm's going off. 40. It's okay. Everything's good. I turned it off. So the bottom line is the Darien Gap is a 4-lane highway to the United States, and it's also destabilizing Panama, right? And China obviously wants Panama. 5% of world trade goes right through that canal that's out my window right now. 5% right there is huge, right? And then it's a strategically, it's close to the United States. Now, keep in mind, countries like Guatemala, which is north of here, actually Costa Rica is the next country, but keep going. Guatemala, of course, borders Mexico. A lot of those villages are emptied out. I mean, they're gone because the Guatemalans are actually in the United States now, right? And so it's a big deal, right? I mean, this is destabilizing all these countries here. China is making a go for places like El Salvador, of course. It's making a go at China. I mean, sorry, it's making it a go at Mexico. And we see, I mean, just bit by bit, slowly encroaching, right? And all over the United States. Now we see the three presidents, Bush, Obama, and Clinton, about 2 weeks ago, talking about flying aliens directly from Colombia and directly from Guatemala into the United States. They're already doing this, by the way. It's just on a small scale. And yesterday, Mayorkas was down in Texas talking about how we're closing the Darien Gap bullshit. I'm here, man. I just left the Darien Gap. The flows, and I know Indian, Imbra Indians and Kuna Indians out in all the key villages. I know Centerfront, which is like their sort of like the army. Very professional, by the way. I know people all, I've got this place stitched up. You can't come through Panama without me knowing about it, right? And the bottom line is, that's a lie that Mayorkas says that we're closing down the Darien Gap. Now, if it ends up being truthful 1 month from now, I don't know. But at this moment, it's an overt lie that he just told in Texas yesterday. The flows are increasing. They're not decreasing. Now, I do believe that he told the U.S. Embassy here that something has to be done in about 90 days. He said that about a week ago, right? I think that instruction came from him. But the U.S. Embassy definitely had instruction that they have to do something. There's a lot of disease coming up through here, by the way. And this is a known thing. This is, again, malaria outbreak here is epic at this point. And it's a strain from Africa. And there's a, and also the, it's funny. I just had dinner recently with a friend of mine. His name is Francisco Agape. He's the mayor of 29 Wunan and Imbara Indian villages right down in Darien. And I know him well. I've been out to probably 20 of the villages, right, with him. And And he said, you know, the malaria outbreak, he said, before the migration, there's always been migration, but it's just never been like dominating the, you know, the gap. He said, we had maybe one or two malaria cases per year. And when the Indians, like Imbara, if somebody would get malaria, we would all talk about it, like, you know, so-and-so got malaria, right? But now there's so much malaria that it's like his wife got it, right? And waterborne illnesses, killing the children, dengue, which the Chinese are known to have weaponized dengue and working on drone technology to drop. Look on my Twitter and look on the video that I put up from Dr. Yan, the Chinese virologist. I just put it up, you know, hours ago. And look, you should see the video on my Twitter now. So, I mean, and not only that, tuberculosis. A lot of people overlook tuberculosis. When you look at mankind's worst diseases, up there with Black Death, smallpox, yellow fever, really up there is tuberculosis. You look at polio, polio is like a pest compared to tuberculosis. Polio is like a nothing compared to tuberculosis, right? You look at COVID, that's like, what is that? Spanish flu is nothing compared to tuberculosis. If you look at old history books, which I'm constantly reading, you'll hear so many references to consumption, right? Consumption is tuberculosis. You'll be reading passages like, you know, the war was, you know, going in this direction, and then the king got consumption or something. You know what I mean? The general, you know, was knocked down by consumption. These sorts of, you know, two of President Nixon's brothers died of tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is epic. And now there's something called MDR-TB, which is multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis, right? It's all over the United States already. Red zones for this include Afghanistan, various parts of Africa, Pakistan as well, right next to Afghanistan. The people were places where people are flooding in without any quarantine, without any checks whatsoever, and being put all over the United States. And lice. Typhus is one of the epic diseases, epidemic typhus, right? Epidemic typhus. I suggest everybody read at least one book on typhus. You can see typhus is spread. Typhus has mostly been wiped out because we know what spreads it and we know how to treat it. It's very readily treatable with antibiotics, and it's epidemic typhus. There's different types of typhus, of marine typhus and scrub typhus. But the one we need to be mostly concerned about is epidemic typhus, you know, like the Black Ages disease, not just then, but I mean, mostly it goes with every famine that you study. There's always typhus. There's always typhus in wars as well. That's why they call it war fever. They call it famine fever. They call it hospital fever. They call typhus ship fever and naval fever, camp fever. It's got all these names. You have typhus outbreaks in these homeless camps in California, right? Right now, look up typhus, homeless camps, California, right? But it's not epidemic because the health departments are still functioning more or less. Now you see this one website called something like, what's the name of it? American Pediatrics Association, something like that. They are now advising that students should not be sent home from school if they're found with lice. That is absolutely insane. There is more and more lice popping up around the United States. This is setting conditions. It's all about conditions, not sparks, right? Conditions are being set for a future epidemic typhus outbreak on a massive scale. Now, where do we get these antibiotics? China, right? And that's actually not a very good place to put your, you know, to put your trust, right? But the epidemic typhus, if you look, by the way, the name cooties, you know, cooties, when you play cooties when you're a kid, you're taught, you know, don't touch them, they've got cooties. Cooties is an old English word for lice, right? So they're teaching you how to avoid typhus, right? Actually, in Netherlands, a curse word like the F word for Dutch people is typhus. They'll be like, typhus, you know. So, I mean, it's so we see these things like the Imbara Indians and others. They have a lot of lice down there, and these people are getting up on these buses and they're going all over the United States. I'm telling you, these diseases are going to be epic. I mean, this is all I do. I'm a war correspondent. I study these diseases. I study famine. I study war year after year after year and country after country. You're going to see typhus outbreaks. You're going to see kids coming home with lice. And then if you don't If you don't take care of those lice, lickety split, your whole family will have lice. This is a big deal, right? And these are things that we have had under control for years because we've had health departments that work. We've had teachers keeping an eye out for kids who are, you know, have lice, and so that, you know, then they send them home, and then they send the health department home, and they get the house cleaned up. Lice are like weeds. You know, you can keep them knocked back if you stay on top of them and you do the smart things. But now we've got the, you know, what's this called? The American Pediatric Association. I think just look up something, you know, Pediatric Association and lice, and you'll find the website, you know, within 10 seconds, and you'll see where they're recommending not sending home children with lice. You just can't make up this stuff unless you want to destroy the United States and do a massive global depopulation, right?
So when you're looking at this in looming threat, and you kind of want to channel this down now, what do you see as the steps really that have to be done to, and I'll just use the terms, to save America, because this flood that's coming in is going to be one of the most destabilizing effects we've ever seen.
Oh, huge, huge. And huge depopulation. You know, I've been, you know, I took Jordan Peterson out to a farm over in Netherlands, and I gave him a detailed briefing over a period of a couple of days about the food issues and the nitrogenous fertilizer issues, right? For instance, nitrogenous fertilizers are obviously a big, big deal. And now we have a shortage. Now, I could talk for hours about this issue, but let's just get down to the gist of it. There will be food shortages. There will be food shortages. Not there may be. There will definitely be food shortages, right? And this is going to build even higher human osmotic pressure, this hop that's going to be pushing mass migrations, right? And these migrations are now facilitated more and more. These almost four-lane highways, these buses, 30 to 40 buses per day, big luxury buses. Look on my Twitter. Look at the videos I've been putting up. Look what's pinned to the top of my Twitter right now, Michael Yon on my Twitter, right? And you see those buses, 30 or 40 buses per day are coming out of Darien Gap now. You know, I remember back when it was 10 and we were like 10 buses a day. Now it's 30 or 40, depending on how many come through that day. And those numbers are increasing. They're getting more buses, right? And that's just the Darien Gap. That doesn't include the Canadian flows. It doesn't include people washing up on our beaches in Florida. It doesn't include people that are coming in with visas to LAX, you know, in Los Angeles Airport or New York or Atlanta or whatever, Miami. It doesn't include any of those flows that are just coming through or just walking across the border in, again, Canada, right? And again, this doesn't include Europe as well. Europe is – look what's happening in France right now. You know, it's all across Europe. Europe has cancer. It's interesting as a war correspondent who's just spent years in so many wars and conflicts. One of the things at some point you get to the point where you can almost smell cancer when you walk in. Like, just imagine being an oncologist for 30 years and you can just walk into a hospital room and go, yep, I don't need any tests. This one has cancer. You know what I mean? I've gotten to that point, right? You reach a certain level. And one of the things I found about conflicts, by the way, is they're like mammals, let's say. All mammals, let's say a mouse versus a whale, right? A mouse and a whale, those are really, really different, aren't they, right? We could talk for a month about how different they are, but a mouse and an elephant are also very, very similar, right? A mouse and an elephant, a mouse and a whale, they're very similar. They both have hearts. They both have nervous systems. They both, you know, a lot of the same chemical processes and that sort of thing. And the morphology actually is quite similar in a lot of ways, right? It's the same with conflicts. When I walk into a different conflict, and it's like being like a pilot who's flown so many different airplanes, you basically know how this thing works. You know what I mean? And it's the same with these conflicts. It's the same with these migration issues. It's the same, everywhere I go. For instance, over in Netherlands, in March, they had an election. I was there for the election, and this party won the elections. It's called the BBB party, right? They call it the Boerenburgerbeweging, which in Dutch language means the farmer. Sorry for my pronunciation. The Boeren Bürgerbewegung, which means farmer citizens movement, right? Now, as somebody who's written books on information war, unfortunately, again, they're only in Japanese, but I've studied information war for years, as have you, not just studying it, but executing it. You know it when you see it, right? You know information war when you see it, because you've just been doing it for years. So I'm over in Netherlands, and I'm there for the election. It's very important because I know that the Dutch farmland is being taken to make tri-state city, to take control of Rotterdam and Antwerp harbors, right? So I'm looking at this big picture. That's why I'm there. But the BBB party, which was an obvious wolf in wolf's clothing. The wolf doesn't even bother dressing up as a sheep anymore, right? It's like, and I'm telling the farmers who ended up, they just brought BBB and they just got 15 seats. They just swept the elections. They just got enormous power in the Dutch government. And they were an obvious wolf dressed as a wolf, right? And now it's only been a month. Well, that was March 15th was the election, so whatever the date today is. And about 2 weeks ago, they showed their face. They're voting in ways that they're stealing the farms. The Dutch are losing their farms right now. And it's like, this is so obvious. It's almost embarrassing to have to say it. It's the same with this weaponized migration. You know, for those of us who actually do this full time, it's almost embarrassing to have to say that you're going to be killed. They're not just here to win your votes. They are here to kill you and take your stuff. And these people coming through Darien Gap, they are useful idiots. They will be killed in large numbers as well at the end of this. These are drones. These are future slaves, many of whom will be killed, right? That's what Stalin did with the Holodomor. Mao did similar. Of course, Mao was always, following Stalin's footsteps. And it's this old strategy. You take these weaponized migrants in, you tell them, hey, the kulaks, these are the ones, the reason that your egg prices are so high, the reason that you're so poor, the reason your life is so bad is because of the Jews or whatever, right? And then you make the label very bad, and then you hang that label on that other person, and then you tell your useful idiots, like, hey, just go take their farm, just go take their shop, just go take their stuff, just take it. Get rid of them and take it. They're evil. They've done all these bad things to you. They're the reason your children are sick. Take their farm. Do it. Go. Full amnesty. And that's what happens, right? That's what's happening in the United States right now. They're being spread, all these weaponized migrants, whether or not the migrants know it themselves or not, these aliens, whether they know it or not, most of them won't realize it yet. But later on, they will be armed, right? Later on, these people that are coming in, these huddled masses, they are an army. They're going to go to war with Americans, and they're going to do it. They're already doing it in Europe. You know, it's unbelievable how simple this is. It's a very simple strategy and highly effective.
So in kind of your closing thoughts here, where do you see the Americans in this place? I mean, we talked before the show about a change in tide, and do you see that as a significant shift from your optic, and what do you see coming out of that?
I see a lot of people still talking trash, but not doing anything. I hear, if you want to see a SEAL turn into a Democrat, just vote for him. He becomes a congressman. And the next thing you know, he's got a patch on his head and he's, drunk and he's become a Democrat. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable, right? I mean, I hear a lot of people talking trash. Oh, when the blue helmets come, that's when we'll stand up. Bullshit. Bullshit. By the time the blue helmets are there, you're dead. You've lost. Right. This is no joke. This is real war. And you're in it right now and losing battles every single day. The border title 42 is going to be dropped. We can see that almost certainly on May 11th. And the border already doesn't exist for the United States for all intents and purposes. And it's just going to be increasingly overwhelmed. And these people are being put all over the United States. You can see them. I go all over the United States when I'm not running around downrange in some, Africa or someplace. I'm running around all over the United States from Oregon to Key West. I'm all over the place. Washington, D.C. I was there for January 6th. I was there in Atlanta watching Antifa and fight and all this sorts of stuff. You know, I was up in Portland watching the same. You know what I mean? This is what I do, is get the atmospherics. I'm telling you, you're in a state of war, and it's going to get highly kinetic and very bloody, and it's going to get very diseased. There will be things like typhus. Tuberculosis is already there, you know, and it's coming. I mean, this is all I watch 7 days a week, everywhere I go. And a lot of, and again, increasing numbers of people see this. The last election in the United States was transparently stolen, by the way. And interestingly, in this latest election, I went to Maricopa County. I'd been overseas for months. I flew straight in from, I think, Netherlands. And I went over to Arizona. I went to Arizona, Maricopa County, you know, Kerry Lake and all that stuff. And I watched that election get stolen. Right at, I was at two of the polling places and the machines didn't work, right? I mean, just stole another election. What did the Americans do? Complain, we're going to take you to court. Yeah, okay, go ahead, go to court. You know, whatever. You know, Turning Point memo, I see those guys drunk at the bar. I'm tired of all these drunks that are saying that, you know, that they're, you know, representing our interests while they're bringing in millions of dollars and they're just basically at the bar talking trash. You know what I'm saying? This isn't time for that. This is a time for men to stand up. Yeah, this is a time for, you know, doing more than talking trash. The border needs to be shut. You know, people are asking, what should we do? Shut the border. Shut the border. Shut the border. That's what you need to do. Shut the border. Is that clear, right? Is there any question about what we need to do? Shut the border. And yet they're not doing it. And Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, people say, well, look, Greg Abbott's taking buses and he's, you know, sending migrants up to Chicago or Washington, D.C. He's on our side. No, he's not. Greg Abbott is on the World Economic Forum website. You know, I'm down there in Piedras Negras, Mexico, on the Rio Grande, on the Mexican side, and he's doing a press conference. This would have been, I don't know, maybe last year. He's doing a press conference and he's talking about how he's shutting the border. I'm like, no, you're not. They're crossing the Rio Grande right in front of me, right now, while you're saying that you shut the border down. And the National Guard are over there helping them up the riverbank, right in front of me. You know, it's like, while you're talking about it. This is like Afghanistan all over again, you know, where you spent time running around quite a lot. And so did I, you know, and just the utter lies right in everybody's faces, right? Shut the border, right? Don't vote for anybody. All these, you know, all these Navy SEALs, I'm so tired of hearing their trash talk. You know, go make your calendars, right? You know, run for office, get drunk, and turn over to the Democrat side, like that guy up in Wisconsin, right? The guy, what's that Navy SEAL guy? He wanted me to take him into Darien Gap, right? Now he's a congressman. I said, no, I'm not taking you to Darien Gap. Don't call me up drunk. You know what I'm saying? Don't call me up telling me how we're going to run around and get into the Darien Gap together. I will tell you if I take you into Darien Gap, right? You know what I'm saying? You know, and now he's up there in Wisconsin. He's one big old Navy SEAL, another one, you know. And what's he doing? Rolling over like a dog, getting his belly rubbed. You know, I'm tired of these guys. You know what I mean? We need serious men. And that doesn't mean little tridents and calendars and stuff. That means guys who will get out and do stuff, right? Right? Guys that will get out and help close the border, which means you know, helping the local sheriffs, helping like in Kenny County down there, right? Sheriff Brad Coe is standing up. He's, you know, outnumbered. I go see him sometimes down in Texas, in Kenny County, Texas. There are a lot of men down there who wish to stand up and a lot of women who will stand up. But there's too many of these people that are just in it for the whatever they're in it for, but they're not doing anything but watching, you know, basically playing the violin at the death camps.
Yep. That's the truth. Michael, where can people find your work?
I'm on Twitter. I'm all over the place. I mean, I'm on Locals all the time, locals.com, Locals. And you know, just do a lot of interviews, of course, like with you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And especially thank you for giving me the space to just talk. Because as you can tell, I get very fired up about this because I'm out here watching the demise of Europe and the United States and Japan and other places. And I'm watching this on a global scale. And I'm just, and the only reason it's happening is men are not standing up with their testosterone and stopping it. Stand up and stop it.
Straight up. Well, Michael, we always close with a prayer, and if it's okay with you, we'll do a prayer.
Yes, please. We need it.
Father God, we just want to thank you for Michael Yon and what he's continuing to do to elevate truth to the world. Just begin this prayer today just by praying for his safety and continued ability to communicate that truth. We need more of this. And Father, we pray that the words that he puts out here will inspire the strength of the men to stand up, to give them spine, to start being the mighty warriors in Christ, to start doing the right thing, to understanding that we are now at a point where we have to get on the wall and start holding the line in a real way. These are difficult times, Father, and we're blessed to have people like Michael that can continue to push the truth out, to continue to take the risks, to bring the truth to the people. We just pray that those words continue to resonate deeply as we work towards a greater awakening and a greater relationship in you. And we say these things in Christ Jesus' name. Amen.